Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 17th of September, recording at 7:41 p.m. British summer time, although it's not particularly summery around here. But this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various different asset classes. Now, a lot of that is review, so I'll just couch everything in terms of that big picture long-term outlook. And that is, first and foremost, that Wall Street is in a secular bear market. And I define that, as you know, as a generation-long period of P/E ratio contraction and rising yields. Depending on how much liquidity is sloshing around in the system, will determine whether we get a clear downward bias for stock market indices in the US, or whether they range much as we saw in the 1967 to, say, 1982 period before the next secular bull market commenced. And for your example of what stock markets are likely to do when there isn't enough liquidity sloshing around in the system, all you have to do is look at Japan from 1990 through to last year. Now, there's certainly plenty of liquidity sloshing around in the system right now, but it's not guaranteed that that will always be the case, but it's sufficient certainly to say today there is lots and lots of liquidity available, and that has certainly added a cushion of support to not just stock markets but to really all markets around the world. And indeed, it has helped to blow some of the bubbles that we see that have been at least partially reflated, and everything from property to some of the stock market rallies that have actually taken place. Now, my feeling overall, again on the long term outlook, is that the period from 2005 through 2006 is likely to be fairly dodgy for stock markets, risky. In other words, there may well be more short opportunities than long opportunities during that period. And then I would expect an improvement in that midterm of the next US presidential election cycle. So from 2007 through 2008, I would expect markets to be putting in some of their better performances. That's very much in line with the historic pattern overall. But now, to bring it down to the short to medium term here, we have a fascinating situation taking place right now. You know my view from the other audios that we saw very important lows in the middle of August, so there were some riveting upward dynamics. I don't wish that I hadn't been on holiday then, but I wish that hadn't happened just back then, because those were such good tradable signals. Now, currently, we've got many indices testing, or not far off testing, the upper side of their boundaries. And this has emboldened the bulls, well, at least talking bulls, as Owen put it in a comment today on the website. Because, well, you and I can see what they're all seeing. Markets have rallied back to areas of prior resistance. And also, the rally has created short-term overbought conditions. And there are some moving averages that come into play as well that they would be looking at. So a number of people are positioned for or are hoping for a tip downwards. And the people who are hoping for a tip downwards are obviously anybody who's sold short. And they would also include the people who came back on holiday, as I did, and want to buy a whole host of investment managers and feel that they're underweight and don't want to chase stocks, least of all when they are testing historic resistance levels. Now, I have maintained that there were background factors that I regarded as extremely important. And I regard the oil price as important. I'll comment on where that is today a little later. And also, I regarded President Bush moving into a lead, although that may not hold. We just have to see. That was a favorable factor for stock markets overall. And I've also said very recently that we were seeing some consolidation, which is hardly surprising given the short-term overbought condition and the proximity of those resistance levels at the higher side of this year's trading range. But if we look very much on a global perspective, use commonality, for instance, in these stock markets, that we see emerging markets continuing to power ahead in a way that we have not seen really since last year in many instances. And we've seen a number of new highs, some in emerging Asia, some in emerging Europe, some in the South American markets. And I emphasize that the emerging markets, I feel, really are going to be by far the most interesting place to be over the next several years. Now, there'll also be times when we'll want to step out and lighten positions considerably because they're high beta, they can get dragged down. And if I felt that Wall Street was going to go into another one of the bungee jumps that we will see from time to time in a secular bear market, then I would certainly want to reduce exposure in those emerging markets. You saw how vulnerable they were sort of around the beginning of this year in some instances. I'll just say one more point on these emerging markets, that the reasons they're going to look so good is that first they're going to see the superior growth rates, and the liquidity sloshing around the system is going to be chasing those superior growth rates. Also, a lot of them are benefiting from outsourcing, and also a number of them provide essential commodities, getting onto the supply and elasticity theme that the other countries, not least China, need to maintain their growth rates. So, for instance, the suppliers of commodities to China have done exceptionally well overall. These are trends that I feel really will endure for a considerable period of time. So that's the way my thinking goes. But I'll get back to this short-term question here of, are markets going to break upwards from these current levels, or are they going to roll over, as I've already mentioned a number of people actually hope? Well, I'm still giving the upside the benefit of the doubt. Now, a trend is a trend until it stops, and we would need to see some quite clear downward dynamics just to indicate that markets are going to pause and go into a consolidation of recent gains, let alone go all the way back down and retest their August lows, as a number of analysts were forecasting not all that long ago. They haven't shown those downward dynamics. I mean, we had some softening, a couple of days ago, midweek, Wednesday, and then markets have picked up here again. The oil will be important, as I've said before, and that's reined in some of the U.S. gains here today, because we've currently got oil, which no sooner does the price ease back as one storm misses the key Gulf of Mexico installations, but then a new storm picks up and people start to worry about that. And that's what's happening in here today, and we've got crude oil back up above 45.60 again. So that's curtailed some of the gains that we had seen on Wall Street earlier today. But as I speak, the Dow's up about 45 points. We're up close to 6 on the S&P, and NASDAQ lagging up 537 on the NASDAQ Composite Index. The Dow was up 70 at one stage, I believe. But as I say, I'm inclined to give the upside the benefit of the doubt, although there is still this high possibility that we will see a bit of a rollover consolidation period during the second half of September and possibly going into the first half of October, but that provided oil, say, stays below that $50 level and Bush doesn't fall well behind in the polls, I think we're more likely than not to see any consolidation followed by some additional gains in the fourth quarter, and then carrying quite possibly on into the new year. And there's some historic precedent for that, as well as you know. So how am I actually playing it in here? Well, I'm very happy to hold my Asian emerging market positions, which are doing doing very well. For instance, that India fund it just continues to push higher. The Malaysia fund, that's really quite steady here overall as well. And the sectors that I like the most are primarily resources oriented, although if we get a rally over the next 2 quarters, you can be sure that a number of other stocks will be performing as well. Okay, now let me move on to bonds, and here I maintain that the secular bull market ended in June of last year. I'm talking about long-dated government bonds now, and the secular bear market, therefore, is what we can expect. And I maintain that bonds are in a top extension phase. And as you know, I'm looking for a sell opportunity in JGBs, and those are the Japanese government bonds, of course, and also in US 30-year treasuries. I don't yet see that, and the signal for that. The US treasuries are down half a point in here today, but they gained over a full point, about a point and a quarter yesterday. So, and then we saw an upside breakout. So the patterns are not yet giving me an excuse to come in and to sell short. Some of the background information as to why we would get that secular bear market. We had a real heyday in bonds, didn't we, during all the deflation fears? And some of those deflation fears are still around. And when the bonds are rallying, people bring out that old argument and dust it down and play it all over again. But I maintain we're not going to see that big deflationary problem, and we're not going to see it because of the Ben Bernanke script about dropping money from helicopters. Well, they don't need to do that, but they certainly printed plenty of money over at the Fed, not to mention what the Bank of Japan has printed all along. And then you've got the European governments, which are breaking the stability pact, so on. There's plenty of government debt out there, and the government debt, the new paper coming on stream, continues to rise and rise and rise. Now, with all that liquidity sloshing around in the system, inevitably some of that's going to go into that paper. But a point that I've made before, if those governments need to borrow so much, do we really want to be lending to them? And no is my long-term answer. And I do feel that all that money liquidity sloshing around in the system has sown the seeds for another inflationary cycle, and that will be negative for bonds over the long term. I also think that the China factor, which has produced pockets of disinflationary pressures to outright deflation in some manufactured goods, and that has also occurred, of course, with the help of rapid technological innovation. And that is certainly going to be around with us for a while longer. I'm talking about the very competitive pricing pressures for so many manufactured goods. But China's growing rapidly, as you know. We've got a rapidly expanding middle class there. India's following right behind. And the long-term impact of China's boom is very much likely to be inflationary. That's a point I made on the some of the website copy earlier in the week. So I've said all along that we were in a new inflationary cycle, but that we wouldn't see that much of it here in the short term, at least in terms of the statistics overall that are produced. But if you pay your household insurance bills, and just about everything else that households pay for, from food to any kind of building or reconstruction work that you actually need, you know that costs are just pushing ahead very, very strongly. A lot of services costs are pushing ahead strongly. So say we're in the early years of another inflationary cycle, and these are all factors that I think will be very bearish for bonds over the medium to longer term, but have not been focused on by the crowd here in the short to medium term. I do feel that that will change relatively soon, and I would certainly expect, if we get booming or just firm, gradually rising stock markets in the fourth quarter of this year, that we'll see those bonds roll over and react. Now, just a very brief comment on some of the corporate bonds. They're likely to do better, and whereas the supply of government debt is just mushrooming, there is some evidence from some quarters. I'm not in a position to check this out, but I'm hearing this from people, that the increase in the supply of corporate debt is much, much lower, and indeed a lot of it is being bought in, and therefore that you could even have a shortage of corporate debt, and certainly would relative to relative to the buyers at any rate, and also relative to the ballooning government debt that we see available in the markets. Okay, moving on to the currency markets. This one I'm going to cut through very quickly in here, because these markets are range-bound. They are not providing any kind of dramatic money-making opportunities here. That has been the case for a number of months now. It will end explosively at some stage, but I'm not going to try to guess when that will be. When I look at the long-term charts, and I posted some of those, that they suggest to me that the US dollar index is in some form of base building stage, which is certainly likely to continue for a while longer. That requires one to script, why would the dollar be bottoming out and able to go up? Well, there's the old carry trade story, or maybe the growth isn't so bad relative to other countries as people had thought. Maybe the foreign holders of U.S. dollars don't chuck it in, and there's been no sign that they were going to do so. And then U.S. interest rates can rise. You're going to come up with a number of different factors, but at this stage, I think there's not a great deal to do. That's good news for those who are dealing in a number of or corporations, in other words, that are dealing in a number of different currencies and have major hedge responsibilities. We can be relatively relaxed in this environment. But as you know from the chart seminar, every sideways trading range is an explosion waiting to happen. It's just a matter of time. I don't feel that explosion is imminent, and I expect further ranging in the currencies. Let's move on now to the commodity markets. And these, a number of these at any rate, fall into the supply inelasticity category. Certainly all of the industrial commodities do. This is a particularly interesting sector, from oil to the metals, through all the metals, precious and industrial metals. They are in secular bull markets that are likely to be spectacular relative to what we have seen so far before it's all over. Now, currently, though, many of them are in ranging patterns, and some of them look vulnerable, such as the industrial metals, because they had had some very good gains in recent months, and show these broadening patterns at quite a high level. It's not beyond the bounds of possibilities that those could be continuation patterns, in other words, launching new upside breakouts. But I am skeptical about that at this stage. and really think that we could see another shakeout in that sector before the overall bull trends go much higher. So I'd be cautious. I am cautious in that sector. As a matter of fact, I've got a short out in aluminium, as you know, put on about a couple of weeks ago, which is actually costing me a small amount of money at this stage. It was down in here today, incidentally. Running through some of them by sectors in precious metals, the one that was very much in the pole position is the platinum. But that has certainly seen a medium-term peak, and it'd be difficult for platinum to maintain that huge premium over palladium, which is very, very much the laggard. And if the sector is in a quiet or corrective phase, as it is right now, then I really don't want to be going into the laggard, that's palladium. And I would be looking for first buying opportunities in some of the leaders. Now, in the gold-silver trade-off, I've said so many times that silver is just a high beta gold, and silver has been under a bit of pressure recently. I'm currently out of that market. It's a market that I love from a trading standpoint. I'm a huge bull of silver, but I'm hoping that that comes a little bit lower. It's down 3 cents in here today, by the way, at 628.8. Gold. If you well, first, I'm a big gold bull, but suspect that gold will underperform the sector, partly because there's more of it about. There's the overhang from central, and there's the overhang from central banks. And it's a little bit of a political football with those central banks obviously keeping an eye on gold as a barometer of inflation. But for very conservative investors, and a number of strategists have said that gold is something that you just buy on setbacks, and I can only endorse that. I myself buy the silver on the setbacks, and I'll repeat the point that it's high beta. High beta gold, so I feel I get more precious metal bang for my bucker, my pound, I should say, with silver. And if we get or when we next get silver, gold, platinum on a bender, I'll be quite aggressive in terms of my purchasing of palladium once again. As far as the industrial metals are concerned, I think that from the bull tack, one really ought to be concentrating on those that still have backwardations. So far, that has been copper, lead, tin, and nickel. I've played all of them except for nickel. One reason for that is it's a much, much bigger contract, and that makes it a little bit more unwieldy for me. At any rate, and also it's often very much of a lead metal in the sector, and I kind of like to let the lead metal go, and then look on a commonality basis at what's likely to be next. Now, I think I already mentioned that in terms of shares, the shares that are benefiting from moves in these sectors should certainly occupy an important position in any diversified share portfolio. I participate in that sector from time to time, but I actually more often than not like the underlying commodity. As I've said before, all kinds of things can go wrong with the share price, and if they have any effect on the metal, it'll probably be to boost it. The oil price. Closed up 171 in here today. That, as I say, pared back some of the stock market gains, put the crude back up at 45.59. Now, I'd been sort of micro commenting on that crude oil price, and this $45 level is a bit emotive. Yesterday it was looking more favorable. We were down below it, get down to 42 something. Today we're back above the $45 level, and certainly if we get upside follow through occurring next week in crude that would be another factor contributing to a slowing, further slowing up the stock market rallies and tipping a number of them over into those second half September, first half October consolidations. Conversely, if we get that sliding back below 45, then that would improve the outlook for stock markets. And certainly, as if we see crude oil NYME break down below $40, that would be a real psychological benchmark. I mean, tons of people are actually forecasting that, well, we need to see some evidence that the chart's actually going on the charts that that's actually going to take place. But that would be, all the other things being equal, quite favorable for stock markets. And I think that's pretty much it, folks, in terms of my overall wrap. I'll also add there that there is a new feature on the website that we launched in here today called Owen's Interesting Charts. There'll be plenty more of those, I suspect. And also, I continued with I put up my second segment in what will be eventually be posted as a tutorial for the use of all the different features and facilities that we have on this expanding website. So that's my wrap. I'll just say have a fantastic weekend. I'll be doing some work, but I'll try to keep an eye on some of the golf as well. All the best.